awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat bread of painful labors. For he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord, the fruit of the womb. It is a reward. Like the arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They shall not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. Chapter 128. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy, and it will be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion, and may you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Indeed, may you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. As we look at this matter of raising a family, these two chapters are part of some that are called the Psalms of Ascent. As I think, if I understand correctly, as they would ascend up to Jerusalem, they would use these series of psalms, several chapters here. And in the midst of that, we see that he talks about the blessings of family. That he talks about the blessings of trusting and serving God. Unless the Lord build the house, they labor in vain. And so as these have been called Psalms of Prosperity, it's for a good reason. These are great blessing. Blessed is the man. And these are great values. I don't care how much money you don't have. If you have a good family, you are rich. Period. Just in Sierra Leone, a couple months ago, I went to one of the brethren's house there. He preaches some, and I had met his wife before, but not much. But this brother had been feeling bad for the last day or two, and I came to the house where the church met, which is close by, and I asked her, and I said, "Are you taking care of Alfred?" And she just lit up, sort of like sunshine. She said, "No, he's taking care of me." And then I watched the family and I watched the fruit of his labors. And he is a blessed man. He doesn't have much to this world's benefit, the goods and the wealth. But those are great riches. Those are some of the things in this world that God provides that bless us in so, so many ways. You know, a lot of times folks don't understand how much work fruit takes. When many years ago, Deborah and I moved to Central Washington with another family to try to start a work. In Wenatchee, Washington, and that's the apple capital of the world. And what happened is it's some beautiful territory there, and a mountain stream running through the Kashmir, the town we were living in, and you see these pieces of property, and somebody buy a piece of property and have three-quarters of an acre, and they'd have some apple trees. They'd buy this property and say, "Man, this is going to be great. We've got these apple trees. We're going to settle in here, and in a couple years, the apples are going to start coming in, and we're going to fill the boxes, and we're going to get rich." And about two or three later, you'd see for sale signs. Because they found out that raising fruit trees, bringing about fruit, is a lot of work. It takes your attention. It takes your wisdom. It takes your awareness. It takes a lot of work, and that's the nature. But as you see these two chapters in Psalm describing, among other things, this matter of the family, and like a vine and an olive tree around the table there in the second chapter that we looked at, chapter 128, that there's a lot of work, but the sweetness and the goodness that comes from that, indeed, are great. And I'm just going to throw this out. You know, when I was growing up, we were able to have supper in the evening as a family. And I realize I can't just look to a passage and say, that's just what you got to do. But it is a wonderful time. My father would get off work about 5 o'clock, and he would come home, and we would have supper a little while after that. We would all sit around the table, usually hear about my dad's work that day and things maybe had happened in mom's life. Of course, I was around her. But it was a blessed time. And, you know, you learn a lot of things. My sister and I, my father was sometimes sort of stern a little bit, and he'd fuss at us a bit. And so one supper evening, my sister reaches over to get something and she knocks her tea over. And my dad just chews on her, "You clumsy," and so forth. And so anyway, got that cleaned up. And a little bit later, I turned around and I knocked my tea over. And so anyway, you know, we cleaned that up and he fussed at me. And it wasn't very long after that he made a move and he knocked his tea over. and he was just sort of quiet and sort of laughed. And many years in the passing, he brought that up a number of times. I had to learn to eat a lot of humble pie. That comes with parenting. But the fact is, you know, we all just mess up along the way, and we have to figure out how to work through that. But you learn all kinds of lessons around the table, just being able to quietly be together. And I think about that when I think about this passage. One having their quiver full. It is a great blessing. It's a great blessing to have children. These are true blessings. Children are a blessing from God. And I'm sorry, we live in a society that has rejected that, and the murder of all the babies that have happened in recent decades. And it's not isolated. There are more happening in other countries than there are here. But it is a sad thing. These little ones are such a blessing. And again, I just need to move forward here. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, will not depart from it. My brother-in-law, Mark Bayberry, preaches, and Kyle's good friends with him. But when I was very first a Christian, and Mark was a young Christian, we were going to teach a high school class or something together. And this passage came up, and at the time Mark said, "Well, this is the rule. You bring them up the way they should go, and when they're old, they're going to be faithful. That's what it says." Well, he doesn't believe that anymore. But I appreciate the spirit about that. But this is a rule of thumb. And he knows that, and it wasn't long after that. I just bring that out because, you know, as you read it, it seems like it's just a math equation, A plus B equals C. But there's many problems, but one of those is free will enters the equation. And so that's a part of this. And that's the nature of the Proverbs. They are rules of thumb, if you were. Here's a wise way to act, and here's how that normally turns out. Now, read Ecclesiastes, and you find out sometimes if you drive safely, somebody runs a stop sign and T-bones you. There are other factors involved. But the rule of cause and effect are there. And so I cannot overestimate or cannot over express how important it is that we are mindful about training our children up. Now, Ben, I understand, trains horses. And they don't just bring horses in there and leave them in the corral until, you know, they're ready to sell them in 3 years. I think he probably has to work at that just once in a while, don't you? And it takes training, and it takes work, and it takes attention, it takes skill. And so as we think about raising children, it's a very, very important thing. The world that our children are growing up in is much different than the one that I grew up in. Now, there are many similarities. There are many fundamentals that are always the same. But we live in a toxic time, and this electronic age has brought new threats and situations into our life like we have really never experienced before. But I want you to understand, even though I think we are living in difficult times, there are lots of Bible passages that show that we can make it even in the midst of difficult times. Take, for example, Noah. In the days of Noah, he walked with God. When the whole world around him, their thoughts and the intentions of their hearts were continually evil and wicked. Or you might think of a couple of women, a mother and a grandmother, who had influence on a young man by the name of Timothy. And they had an unfeigned faith. And Paul says, "I'm confident that you have that same kind of faith." And if you think the Greco-Roman world was as pure and holy, and that's why Christ came to the world, you need to take a second thought, because it was a mess in so many ways, philosophically, morally, and otherwise, religiously. Back some years ago when I was spending time in southern part of Africa, some friends of mine were telling about a man in Zimbabwe who had four virgin daughters. And in Zimbabwe, that is a challenging thing. I'll just leave it at that. But that is not often what happens. Sexual immorality is rampant in many places in that country, in Africa. But he stood before the congregation and says, "I have four virgin daughters, and I thank the gospel of Christ for that." Because that's not what the rest of the world around him was doing. And that hit me powerfully. Here's a man who took the word of God seriously. He tried to treat his wife as God would have him. He tried to honor his daughters and treat them in a way that God would have. And his expressions were of great humility and thankfulness to God. The good fruit that comes from the mind and the will of God. We need to remember that in a dark world, and it is true that the darker it gets, the light that shines will shine brighter than ever. And I want to suggest to you that that is one aspect of our consideration about evangelism, is that people see that we have a family relationship that is filled with love and fidelity, and those things are of value. Oftentimes people can see that and say, that's worth having. What are they doing? What is going on? And it's to the glory and the praise and the honor of God. But our lives are telling an absolute story. Now, this is a shotgun chart. And sort of, I'll say it this way. I'm going to throw a lot of stuff against the wall here in about a minute. And anything that sticks, great. But we're going to move on. There are a lot of challenges. We have exposure in every direction. The internet, the social media, pornography, television, the ability to come and go and be exposed. That is a challenge in and of itself for us. There are sirens of all kinds of things crying out to our children as they grow up. The social norms are twisted. When I was growing up, you know, at least there was some still stability in that way. In a generation before me, I remember a man saying in the town that he grew up in, there were only two divorces that he knew of in the whole town. And that was frowned upon. One of them, he said, and I know what was a bad situation. The other one, I'm not familiar enough. But I'm just saying at this moment that what has happened in the social norms in this country has been turned upside down and inside out. And it used to be that young people could see some things that were decent around them and see some integrity. Now, I'll suggest I still see that in some people. And I still see some honor and integrity in people. And I'm thankful for that. And I hope, you know, some of those people sometimes can reach with the gospel. But the world is twisted. And they're not going to get the will of God and the truth and the wisdom of God by simply looking at the world. Now, they may see some things and say, man, I don't want that. There's got to be a better way. We live in a me society. And I don't think that's by accident. I think the devil has orchestrated that, social engineering and all. And it's all about me. I mentioned some of that last night. And you talk about a cancer. That is a huge cancer. And so our children need to see something other than that in us as parents. It's not all about me. Because they're going to hear it in lots of directions that it's all about them. And so we need to lead a better way and teach a better way. Materialism and wealth. Sometimes it seems like that's what things are about. I had someone come to me. I've got to be very vague here. You know, there was a time I didn't have to worry about a sermon going any farther than the people listening to it. But now you put it on a microphone, you put it on the web, and so even though I'm not ashamed of saying this, I don't want to hurt anybody, but a situation where a younger man came to me, and he was talking to me, and his uncle and his grandfather and his father, you know, they were interested in having bigger fishing rods and all this kind of stuff. And he said, life's got to be more than that. And they were a zealous religious people of some religious group. And so he's just sort of walked away from all that. The things of this world can consume us. And it can appear that that's what our life is about. It's not wrong to have wealth. We look at examples like Abraham in the Old Testament. We can see that, or Job. But certainly there are a lot of warnings that our Lord gives us and others about that. But our children can see what we really pursue. There are fewer healthy families and divided homes, as we talked about last night. Those kinds of examples are sometimes harder for our young people to see. Challenges of churches, where people that are supposed to be following God are spiritually watered down. And the way that they live spiritually in their homes is not what God would have. And the relationship that they see is not that which is going to call them to something higher. That is a problem. A direct assault against the family. Direct assault against authority. There's a man about 30 plus years ago, Robert Bork, who wrote a book, Slouching Toward Gomorrah. And basically what he did in that, if you get your dictionary out and read it, is he was documenting the rebellion of authority starting back in the 50s, the riots in the 60s. He was a Supreme Court justice nominee. He was a lawyer, and it wasn't directed as a religious book, but just looking at our nation, and we see it in every direction, and it is just like a cancer that's eating away. And it's, again, it's not by accident. The one ultimately behind that is the evil one, the one who's ultimately in rebellion against God, trying to take all with him that he can. The matter of laziness, a lack of work and focus, mentally impaired, that we let emotionalism rule us. We don't learn how to think and think critically. That, again, is being undercut. Isolation, weak social skills, boys living in games, and girls living in social media and surreal realms. All these things, again, these are just challenges, and the list could be put up here much longer. But these are some real things that have an impact upon us. Let me read something here real quickly about this idea of laziness. And I had to go look it up, because I didn't bring my paper with me. But I read this some time back, a few months ago. The founder of Dubai, Sheikh Rashad, was asked in an interview about his country and the future of his country, Dubai. And he replied, "My grandfather rode a camel, my father rode a camel, I ride a Mercedes, my son rides a Land Rover, and my grandson's going to ride a Land Rover, but my great-grandson is going to ride a camel again." And he says, "Why is that?" as he was interviewed. And his reply was, "Hard times create strong men create easy times create weak men create difficult times. Many will not understand it, but you have to raise warriors and not parasites." Now, whether that's true, I tried to fact check it. Somebody said, you know, that's not accurate. So I read it and say, well, he didn't say that. His dad said that. And so they were trying to put it away. But the reality is true. You don't become strong by sitting in a chair and doing nothing. You don't become morally strong. The drive to go forward and do what you need to do, the challenge before you, by being soft. We're not doing our children any favors by not helping them through the challenges and strengthening them to go forward. You know, I grew up sort of the other end of that. My dad apologized to me later. He says, "Son, I grew up in the military." He was drafted into Korea. And he was like a drill sergeant at times, wanted to sort of break me. That's just what he learned. I'm not trying to put him down. He understood that. He apologized. And I spent time in the military, and so I appreciate discipline. And my boys are men from the ground up. I mean, they'll jump in, whatever they need to do. Let's get her done. But that happens because we try to lead them in that way so that they have the courage and the strength to step forward and do what they need to do. And we start that as they are little, just in little challenges, age appropriate, trying to help them go along. As parents, we need to be alert and sober and aware. There are passages to talk about that. I'll have a couple in a chart or so here. But we need to be sober and watchful and mindful, wisely protective, and we need to be a companion. We are the parent, so we're not just on a friend level. I'm friends with my children when they were growing up, but I was their parent. I'm dad. She's mom. And you will respect her. I'm going to make sure you respect her. They did anyway. But as we look at this, we need to start building these relationships when they are young. When I was first a parent, I didn't understand that quite so much. I thought, you know, I don't do the baby thing so well. I don't understand it. My wife, you know, she seemed to have an extra sense about all that. But she helped me understand, no, you got to build a relationship with them when they're little bitty and as they're growing up. And then when you get here, sometimes we think, oh, when they get up there and they get interesting, then I'll start having fun. If you haven't built a relationship, it's going to be a lot harder. And so you start while they are young, and you build a relationship. You lead them, and you help them so that they will know the things that are important. The influence of the world is powerfully pouring out upon them in ways like it never has been able to before. And we've got pipelines, if you would, of stuff coming our way. And so in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15, a passage, three verses that we are pretty familiar with, it says, "Do not love the world nor the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away, and also its lust. but the one who does the will of God abides forever. The world has powerful calls. We live in the flesh. And because of our flesh and our pride and our desires, we have a struggle with life, and we have to figure out what we will do. And as parents, we want to help them to understand that, and we want them to see in us a better way. I'll go quickly with this because I know my time's getting away. I love studying the prophets. And in Ezekiel, one of the chapters, in chapter 33, he has been given to be a watchman. You can go back and read about it in chapter 3 as well. But he is a watchman, and he's supposed to warn the man that's in sin, so hopefully the man will turn from his sin. So if you warn the man and he doesn't turn from his sin, his blood will be upon him, but not upon you. But if you see him acting in a sinful way, and you don't talk to your brother, you don't talk to as a watchman here, and he continues his sin, his blood's going to be on him, but it's going to be on you too. He was to be a watchman, watching out for God's people. And so from that, I want to extrapolate, you know, as a parent in my home, I'm watching out for my children. I'm trying to do them good and help them. Yeah, they've got their own mind. And there's no way to express how true this next statement is. Every kid is different. Every child is different. Again, we had a daughter, twin boys, and then another boy. They were all in high school at the same time. They were close together. We wanted to be able to grow up together, and the Lord helped us with that, throwing twins in the middle. But every one of them is different. And then now that we've got grandchildren, every one of them is different. And my wife ran daycare for some 30 years in our home to help pay the bills while I was preaching in Illinois. And all those kids come, they're different. But there are some fundamentals and principles that are in place for everybody. We may have to figure out a little bit different way how to deal with that sometimes. And we do the best we can. Understand that. When we set our heart on doing the best we can, that's the best we can do. We keep learning. We keep doing. And if I make a mistake in dealing with my child, I become impatient, I fuss, and I've had to do this. Say, son, forgive me. I was tired and I was frustrated. And when you did this, I overreacted. Will you forgive me of that? Because we're still human as parents. But they need to see, what should I do as a human? When I mess up, straighten up. And this text in the first three chapters of 1 Samuel about Eli and his sons. He warned his sons, but it was soft. Go read and study about that a little bit. And it didn't turn out pretty, as you remember. He did not fulfill his responsibility there. We need to keep our eyes open and aware. And there are all kinds of things, as I've said, influencing. In 1 Thessalonians 5 and 1 Peter chapter 1, there are verses here that tell us about being aware and being on guard and so forth. And again, as I said, I'd like to read those, but I'm going to move forward. There are things that are out of my control, but there are a lot of things I can control. And I just found this graphic, and I liked it. I thought it tends to demonstrate it in control here in the blue circle, my thoughts and my actions, what I give my energy to, how I speak to myself, the goals I set, how I spend my free time, how I handle challenges, my boundaries. Now, in the white, on the outside of that circle, things out of my control, the action of others. I can't always control that. Or the past, or the opinions of others, or what happens around me. And so there are a lot of things I can't control. I'm not going to waste my time out there in things I can't do anything about. Sometimes what we do is we spend all our time outside of the blue circle, and we don't do what we can do. I've done that, have you? And so we just need to find out now, okay, what can I do to help my son and my daughter and my family, since that's our subject here? And you get busy and do that. Now, for a lot of years, I've made this statement. If the Lord said, Gail, I want you to preach a lesson on home and family, but you can only use one text out of the Bible, it's this text. And it's a text that so many people know. The first and the greatest commandment, as that comes up in the gospel several times, comes from Deuteronomy chapter 6. You know, you hear people saying, and I was just talking about this lately at home, you hear people talk about the idea, oh, you just love everybody and nothing really matters. Well, chapter 6 talks about you love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. But do you know what the previous chapter says? It lists the Ten Commandments and gives the commandments of God. Here's the will and the mind of God expressed. And then what does this say? These words which I am commanding you today, let them be on your heart. That's the nature of the love of God that the Bible talks about. I love God, and so I'm going to do the best that I can to know and to do His will. Genuinely. Not for show, not for people at church, not for somebody else, but because that's who I am. I serve my God. And I may stumble along and not do it very well, but it's going to be obvious. That's what I'm trying to do. And so what this text tells us, and back in verse 3, it gives some more information about that, but I will move on here. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with your soul, with all your soul, strength, and might. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. So you love God first. You put the will of God, the commands of God on your heart. You pour that in you. And you live that. Then you are at a place to teach your offspring. If we think setting out some books and teaching them to memorize some stuff is what the scriptures talk about, then I think we've missed something. That is all built upon this fundamental premise that I love and respect God. I want to know and do His will. That's why I do this. It's not out of rote memory. It's not that because that's what the other brethren do. I'm trying to know and do God's will. And that's the foundation that parenting needs to come forward from. And sometimes we spend a lot of time chasing a lot of other things around and we miss the foundation, but this is the foundation in our homes. Now, as I've said already, what that does and incorporate is the fact that each one of those children have free will. They'll choose what they want to do. But I want to help them make good choices along the way. There is a story that I've told many times. It's told about Albert Einstein. He's leaving Princeton. He's on a train going somewhere and to speak. And a conductor comes down through and taking tickets. And Einstein's, you know, feeling around. He can't find his ticket. And the conductor comes and he said, "Oh, sorry, I can't find my ticket." He says, "That's all right, Dr. Einstein. I know you've got a ticket. It's okay." And so he goes on by him, and he's looking around, and finally the conductor gets back to the back, and he looks up there, and Einstein's down on the floor, and he's looking under the floor. And so he comes, "It's all right, Dr. Einstein, I know who you are." He says, "Son, I know who I am also, but I have no idea where I'm going." Let me ask you the question, do you know where you're going? As you're trying to raise your sons and daughters, or in our case at this stage in life, trying to have influence in our children and now our grandchildren, do I know where I'm going? That's at the heart of that. The acorn doesn't fall far from the tree. Or if you like the other rendition of that, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And again, that's just a rule of thumb again. But there's great truth in it. There's another story about a farmer. He was going out to his barn on a snowy day, and as he stepped out the back door and the snow was sort of deep from the night's snow that had been dropped, he's striding out across there, and he looks behind him, and his little boy's right behind him, and his little boy's out there, and his little boy's stretching way out there trying to put his feet in the footsteps where his father was, and the man stopped dead in his tracks, and he turned around and says, "I've got to straighten my life up because my son is following in my footsteps." That's sobering. What kind of an atmosphere is there in my home? What is it conducive to grow? Deborah and I like to garden, and so we enjoy that in these an illustration like this. But my home is like a greenhouse, and you know, what kind of conditions are here? Are they spiritual? Is it a spiritual atmosphere? Is the kind of nutrition and all that's going to help this growing process spiritually? And the relationship that we're talking about, is it there? Again, we choose. And when we find that we're not where we need to be, one of the wonderful things about being a human being and having free will is say, "Hey, I'm going to get over here where I need to be. We can change this." As a matter of fact, we do need to. A man I don't have much respect for was asked one time, he says, Muhammad Ali, he was being interviewed and says, do you think the same thing about this you thought 20 years ago? And he said, son, if I thought the same thing now, I'd wasted 20 years of my life. We learn and we change, and so we can do that. But our home is a place, it is like a refuge for our children and a training ground and a way to nourish them, to grow up and to be what God would have them to be. I want as many people pushing the car in the right direction as possible. I use that illustration. My kids were growing up and thinking about this process. If you've ever tried to push a car by yourself, it's sort of a chore. But you have to overcome that inertia, that ability that it wants to stay there. You've got to move it. And if you get people to help you move in the right direction and help keep you pushing, that's a great thing. And that's what I want in the raising of my kids and my grandchildren. I want all the good, godly influences pushing in the way that's righteous and good before God. So that means I'm going to try to connect them with people who love God and are humbly serving God and help with an environment to do what I can in this. I need to limit the world's grasp on my home and my family. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, a text that probably all of us are familiar with. He talks earlier here in chapter 6 about the children and obeying their parents. We'll talk about that later. But in verse 4, he says, and fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. That takes spiritual feeding them and correcting them and helping them. And it's just like so many other things. It's a complex deal, and there are different things needed at different times. As we said already, we've got to be aware of not only the threats, but their need. I put some compost in our garden. We have terrible soil where we live, and so I made a raised bed. And I hauled some compost in there. I thought, oh, well, this is going to be great. And the plants come up, and they're sort of yellowish, and they didn't have anything. I had to put some fertilizer in there. Go out and sprinkle some around there so they could have nutrition. And so sometimes that's what has to happen. We have to do various things. We see what's going on. What can I do to help here? Sometimes I may ask somebody else, hey, this is what I'm doing. Any thoughts? But when it's said and done, I'm the dad. I've got to make some decisions about this. I love old clipper ships, and I was looking at a book back probably 20 years ago, and I found this illustration, and it was interesting to me, because on a clipper ship, I'm going to step away from that mic for a minute, but you can see there are different parts, like this knee of the ship, and these different parts, what they would do is they would train trees to grow in a certain way, and up here in this circle, you can see a young tree, and they would put certain strings, ropes up there, and they would pull it. And they're training in certain ways to grow in a certain way. Like, man, that's exactly what's involved. As my children grow up, I'm trying to put good pressures on them to help them grow up in a way that is good and useful and hopefully will take them to heaven at the end of their life. And so I love this picture just because I have maybe a fascination with that. But the question is purpose in life. What am I building? What is the goal as I raise my children? That's an important question. What is the goal I'm trying to accomplish in this matter? What is coming into our home? I cannot hardly perceive of the magnitude of the stuff that can come into our homes today. When I was a young fellow, none of that was around. And even after the years passed, as I was an adult, it was still in a very primitive state. And now, the pipelines come into our homes. But the thing is, there are buttons we can shut some of that off with. We can bring some control to that. But I need, as I said a moment ago, we need to be aware and sober and alert to these things. What's coming into my home? And again, we could spend a lot of time there, but I'll go forward. Here's a little poem that I like a great deal. The little poem says, I took a piece of plastic clay and idly fashioned it one day, and as my fingers pressed it still, it moved and yielded to my will. I came again when days were past, the bit of clay was hard at last. The form I gave it, it still bore, but I could change it, that form no more. I took a piece of living clay and gently formed it day by day, and molded with my power and art a young child's soft and yielding heart. I came again when years were gone, and it was a man I looked upon. He still that early impress wore, and I could change him evermore. Now again, there are different factors. We have free will and things of this nature. But those years, as our children are young and as they're growing up and we're trying to have an influence on them, that sets up and those opportunities pass. And so let us just do what we can in that. As I said, when our children were young, I was struggling trying to figure out how to live life and how to raise my kids. And I was taking an older preacher back to an airport one day, and I was sort of saying, what do I do? You know, we've got these kids and trying to. And so he listened for a while, and he said, Gail, your problem is you just need to listen to the Lord, which is what I was trying to do. But he was making reference to this passage in Matthew 6:34. And basically this passage says, you live it a day at a time. And his advice to me, which has been incredibly powerful, is you be what God would have you be today. You make the choices today that God would have you do. You do the best you can in interacting with your children today and leading them and influencing them today. And then if God gives you tomorrow, you live tomorrow that way. You do what God would have you to do. You live today for God. You put things in order where they need to be. And if he gives you another day, then that's what you do that day. And as you do that day by day, whatever bridges you have to cross down the road, you have done everything you can to prepare to cross them. That's where it's at, hammering it out day by day. And that has been so helpful to me. And so I would encourage you as parents and grandparents, just be mindful that today you have an opportunity to have an influence, to make choices, to help them to learn, to help them to grow, and to make a difference. Who controls your mind? There needs to be this matter of training and discipline. We're going to talk about some skills to do this tomorrow night. The devil and the world want to control our offspring, but that's our responsibility. And the lesson's almost yours, but the problem of isolation being disconnected because of the electronic age, what do we do? Don't let your kids live with their nose stuck in electronics, and don't you do it, dads and moms. I like electronics. I like this technology. And man, it enables me to do some things I can't imagine I can put in my pocket. But life is not about stuff. It's about people. And sometimes what I need to do is put this thing in my pocket, shut off the TV, the internet, maybe give them a certain amount of time to play games or to do certain things. You have to make those judgments. I'm not trying to micromanage your life, but I'm telling you, life is not about electronics. It's not about a surreal world, and people are getting divided and separated more and more instead of being drawn together. People have a hard time interacting with each other because they don't know how. And young people grow up and they get out of high school, and they haven't figured out how to talk and interact with people, how to be a young man. When I was 18 years old, I thought I was going to Egypt. I was 101st Airborne, hadn't been out of training long, and we were locked down. And a smart lieutenant came in and said, 80 seconds in the air, we're getting ready to load. 18 years old. I wasn't ready to die. I wasn't a Christian, and I just remember vividly thinking, I don't want to die behind some sand hill alone. I'm not promoting military at all, but that's where I happened to be at the time. We need to raise our children up to interact with brothers and sisters in Christ, their siblings, with mom and dad, play games, talk, laugh a lot. My wife helps me with that a lot. She has a positive spirit and laughs a lot, and she's helped. But that's an atmosphere that we want, and I try to grow on that and do the best I can at that. We do what we can. We're all different. I'm not trying to make a cookie cutter that we're all just alike. But there's these fundamentals that we're talking about. They're there for all of us. And I'm talking to you about these things again, as I said to begin, not because I got everything sorted out and I know everything, because these are just some nuts and bolts that are true. I just want to help you. I just want you to know and to think about it and to look into it and be mindful of what's going on. This matter of social isolation is certainly a great, difficult challenge. My last chart. I need to be more concerned and work towards getting them into heaven rather than Harvard. I'm sorry, my children need a training. They've got some education, and I'm thankful for that, and I'm not against that. My kids, the twins ran track. One of the twins played basketball. Our youngest son, he played football. It was in his place, but that's not life. Basketball is not life. God is life. I'm trying to train them up to walk with God, to be a disciple of Christ, to make heaven their home. That's my purpose. That's what's at stake. And again, as parents, we just do our part. We do what we can. Let us lead them, draw them, and connect them with our Lord and with those that love the Lord. Now, you have a great blessing here. I mean, from what I observe, seems to me that there's several folks here that are trying to serve the Lord. Young people, that's a great blessing to you. It seems to me, and again, I've not been here long, but it seems to me like there are several people here that are just wanting to walk and know and do God's will. And every one of you is different. But young people, you see some folks that are generally just trying to do that. It's worthwhile. It's valuable. And I'm telling you, as an old man who's experienced a lot of life, I've been all around the world. I chased every adrenaline thing you can think of. I tried a lot of other things. There's no one like Jesus. And fun is not a substitute for joy. But what our Lord brings is something that eclipses all this world has to offer. Yeah, the winds blow and there are troubled waters at times and uphill climbs. But if you hang in there, it's worthwhile. Thank you for listening so carefully tonight. If you're able, I hope you'll come back tomorrow night. And we'll talk about some skills in parenting, some fundamentals I think that'll be helpful to us. Hope you'll be able to be here and be a part of that. Thank you again for being such a great audience, listening so carefully. And like I say, I feel deeply about this. I wish I had more ability and more knowledge and more wisdom and more skill. Let's get up here and do what I can. But right here's the answer. The mind and the will of God. Seek it out. It is always right. God bless you as you do so. If you've not obeyed the gospel of Christ, the problem is when we sin, we separate ourselves from God, and we've all sinned. And so God made a way we can have forgiveness of sin and be reconciled to Him. Thursday night, I'm going to be talking about that. If you have friends and neighbors that you'd like to hear something about the gospel itself, I'd encourage you to bring them. Thursday night, I'll be talking about that, the problem and God's solution to that. But what the Bible teaches us, that when we recognize that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God, and that we are convinced and convicted of that, and so we make a choice to turn from our own way and our sin and to follow Him, that's called repentance in the Bible. I'm committing to follow Him. I'm going to be His disciple. I'm going to confess with my mouth that Jesus Christ is God's Son, because that's what's in my heart. And I'm making Him the boss of my life, my Lord and Master. And then I'm committing to be baptized in water to have my sins forgiven, because that's what the book says. That's why. But that is not the end. Matthew 28:20, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the world. I'm committed to follow Jesus, wherever that leads. And you know what will happen? If I follow the footsteps of Jesus, I'm going to end up where Jesus is. At the right hand of God. If you understand your need, that you're not right with God, and you need to obey this gospel, we'd be happy to assist you. If you don't understand this, just reach out to anybody random, and what we'll do is not just talk to you about something. We'll open our Bible, we'll put our finger on the verses, so you can read
what the mind of God has expressed here, what is necessary. If we can help you in any way, that's what we want to do. We care about you. We want good for you. And we are all recipients of the blessings of God, every one of us. Everyone in here has been damned to an eternal separation from God because of our sin. By the grace of God, He made a way. We can be reconciled. If you're subject, won't you come forward as we stand?